There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Welcome to College Football Live, presented by Mercedes-Benz.
Baby is back. How about the smooth sounds of Hall
and Oates?
Okay, I mean, if that doesn't get you in the mood, I don't know what does. Welcome into College Football Live. I'm Cassidy Hubbard alongside Mark Sanchez, Dusty Dvorak, and Emmanuel Acho. And look, something we know is going to happen this weekend, college football. It is back. We're going to see a Florida team that is ranked 8th in the AP poll taking on Miami. And even though the AP poll, we use it as a guideline, it is not a fortune teller. In fact, over the past 5 years, there have been 10 instances where a team finished the season unranked after being in the top 10 in the preseason poll, including Wisconsin, Miami, and Auburn in 2018. So not to be Debbie Downer here, but let's get into some negatives. Which current ranked team do you see falling out of the top 25?
When you ask that, you mean which fan base is going to be mad at me?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Really mean. I beat up on Florida, so we'll take it easy. I think it's Notre Dame, guys. Mm. And I look at the schedule, and it's really tough on Notre Dame this year. How about the road games? Let's start there. At Georgia, at Michigan, at Stanford to close. And I think the home game against Virginia is going to be very tough. But also within this schedule, they got six different games where the teams are coming off a bye. USC off a bye, Virginia Tech off a bye, at Duke off a bye, Navy and Boston College. I like Ian Book, the quarterback, coming back. He solidified that offense. Got to replace their running back, big-time receiver in Boykin. Three draft picks on the defensive side. I don't think that they're just going to be an awful football team. But when you look at this schedule, I think it's going to be pretty daunting.
And I hear that totally. And you talk about all those teams coming off bye weeks. That's for sure tough.
More time to prep.
Exactly.
That's really tough.
You get that extra week to prep. I mean, you guys know as well as I do. That's like a free week. That's like you're getting that much of a leg up on the competition. So Notre Dame is going to get a lot of teams' best shot throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, for me, I got to go with LSU. And for the same exact reason that you did, it has everything to do with schedule. Now, LSU's defense, we all know how good they will be. Yes, they lost some pieces, but it doesn't matter. You're returning Grant Delpit and some studs outside. But after you play Texas week two, just understand what you have to go against. You go Florida, Mississippi State, Auburn, and Alabama in back-to-back-to-back-to-back weeks. That's just too tough, in my opinion. If you're talking about the top 10 teams, that's going to be very hard to go through without a blemish. Not to mention, offensively, who's going to be the workhorse at running back? I think that's the question I have. There's no longer Leonard Fournette. There's no longer Brissett. So who's really going to take some pressure off of Joe Burrow?
I absolutely agree.
Joe Brady, the new offensive coordinator, I can't wait to see what he does. He came from New Orleans Saints, right? He's a quarterback's coach with Drew Brees, and they say now they're going to be more of a spread team, throw the football down the field. I think that can make things interesting. And if he's as good as people say he is, and Joe Burrow can be a quality quarterback, I don't know. I think LSU could be a pretty tough team.
I'm going to go with Auburn. I'm worried about Gus Malzahn. And like you guys said, part of it's schedule. Part of it's who are we playing at quarterback? Who's he going to start at quarterback? Is it going to be Bo Nix? Is it going to be Gatewood? First, we talk schedule again. Let's say they're in the West. They got to play everybody in the West. And then they draw the top two teams in the East in Florida and Georgia, plus their opener, call it a home game, if you will, in Dallas, right? Auburn probably going to win the crowd there. But that's no easy start against Oregon, who's coming in ready to roll with one of the top O-line units in the country.
What's really tough to me, Mark, and you hit the nail on the head, that opener can dictate a season.
Everything.
Win or lose. Remember, USC 2 years ago, Sam Darnold's junior, second to last year before he left.
Waxed.
They got waxed by Alabama. Then remember what happened to Florida State. We all thought they were going to be powerhouses, and Alabama went in there and dismantled them physically and by the scoreboard.
And not just implications for those two teams, but for those two conferences. It sets the table for the rest of the season for the Pac-12 and the SEC.
That is the Super Bowl for Oregon.
Yeah,
and for the Pac-12, right? That is a huge, bigger game for them than it is for Auburn.
Yeah, and a schedule can make or break you. As much as these schedules may be hard, if they can check off and get W's, that can shoot you to the top. And we look at a game like this weekend. If Miami can beat Florida, then they may see themselves into the polls. So let me ask you this. Which teams that are on the outside looking in do you think will finish in the top 25, Acho?
For me, it's South Carolina, and it's because of Will Muschamp, the head coach of South Carolina. He said something that stuck with me. They asked him, so Muschamp, how do you feel kind of being Clemson's little brother? He bucked up. He said, we're nobody's little brother. And I said, Muschamp is ready. Not to mention that young man at the helm, Jake Bentley, a phenomenal quarterback. Yes, he lost Deebo Samuel, but returning Brian Edwards and getting a transfer from Clemson, and Tavian Feaster, the beast running back who is a workhorse specifically in the red zone. Muschamp will always have them boys ready on defense. I think this year, Jake Bentley as a senior takes the next step on offense. They can really, really make some noise in the SEC.
I think that's a great call in the SEC. For me, I'm going Baylor in the Big 12.
I love that.
What Coach Matt Rule has been able to do. You look at him at Temple, his last 2 years there, he had 20 wins. And then from his first year at Baylor, he goes from one win to seven wins in his second year. I really think Charlie Brewer's primed to have his best season yet as a true junior. He was a Texas Bowl MVP. They have 8 returning starters on offense. I think they're going to be electrifying. I don't know much about their defense, but they're also in the Big 12, so everybody scores 40 points.
James Lynch, defensive lineman, maybe the best defensive lineman in the Big 12. I like that Baylor picks. Don't sleep on Matt Rule and the Bears. But for me, it's Missouri. I had a chance to go to Missouri, called their spring game, and I got to tell you, I'm buying on Barry Odom's team this upcoming season. I think they're legit. Their schedule sets up extremely well. And I'm just going to tell you, watch out. Kelly Bryant, he's motivated. He's looking to prove a point at Missouri. Veteran offensive line, Larry Roundtree went for over 1,200 last year. It's going to be a run-heavy offense and a defense led by Cale Garrett, one of the best linebackers no one's talking about. I think this is a scary football team. How about the draw they get on the west side? They play Arkansas and Ole Miss. They miss everybody else. The only tough game on the schedule on the road is at Georgia. This is a Missouri team. Don't think I'm crazy when I say they could be 11-1 or 10-2 type of team. And don't forget the sanctions that are weighing over their head. That's galvanized that team, brought them together. No senior left. Watch out for the Missouri Tigers.
If Missouri and South Carolina can add to that current SEC total teams in the AP poll, that would give them 8. But as of right now, it's actually the Big Ten who leads the way with 7 teams in the top 25, followed by the SEC with 6. And this marks the first year since 2004 that a conference other than the SEC has had the most teams in the preseason AP poll. But when it's all said and done, Dusty, which conference will have the most teams in the top 25 at season's end?
What's the SEC? They got the most talented players. We see that every year in the NFL draft.
Strong statement.
And you look there, 6 already in this preseason. It's 6 in the top 16, by the way.
Yes.
And, oh, by the way, my man Acho already made the point for South Carolina. I made the point for Missouri. There's more teams right there creeping to get in that top 25. And how about this, Dad, if you need another one? Since 2012, when the SEC went to 14 teams, only one time in 2015 did the Big Ten have more teams in the final AP poll than the SEC.
This is the second time this year.
I'm calling it because that is my pick. It's the Big Ten. I'm saying the Big Ten will have more teams in the top 25. Let's show some love to the Big Ten first off. But also, yes, at the top, when you're talking about the best teams, it's the SEC, by far and away. You have Alabama, you have Georgia, you have LSU. But I think the bulk of the conference, when you get into Wisconsin, Penn State, Purdue, Northwestern, and I think Nebraska which got a little bit of love, ranked 24, if I'm not mistaken, I think they jump up. When you look at the bulk of the conference, that's where I like the Big Ten. That's where I think the Big Ten truly makes its mark. I'm with you, Dusty. The top tier, the creme de la creme of the SEC, they're a beast. But I think the Big Ten, they got more meat and potatoes.
Top 10 for sure. I think SEC is going to run the top 10. But 25, I do think it's going to be the Big Ten for the second time.
If you need another point just to prove you boys wrong, I got one for you. How about the conference schedule? How about that the Big Ten has to play 9 conference games, only 3 out-of-conference games, whereas the SEC has 8, and then they have that extra win. And let's face it, it comes down to wins and losses in the top 25. So I just think the SEC has a an easier path to get more teams in the top 25.
Fair. What about, do you say it's a landslide for them to over the Big Ten to get 2 teams into the college football playoff?
I'm not ready to go there yet, no. But I just think overall top 25, I think the SEC is going to edge them out.
How do you feel, Acho, about
it? I think it's for sure a landslide for the SEC to have 2 over the Big Ten. Mainly, I said this before, maybe a week or so ago, it's all scheduling. Ohio State, Michigan, they play each other the last week of the season. The voters do not have time to forget the sin of that loss. When you think about even Oklahoma and Texas, they play each other in October, early October at that. So whoever loses, you can kind of forget about it, assuming they don't see each other again in the championship. But when you're talking Ohio State, Michigan, those are the most likely representatives of the Big Ten. But when you play each other so late, you make it tough.
You lose too late. It's over for really your chance at the playoff.
Unless you're an SEC team.
And then you come in with 2 losses.
Look, just FYI, Pac-12 is 3rd behind the Big Ten and SEC with 5 teams currently in the AP poll. But, Mark, one glaring omission coming up. We'll discuss the state of USC. Also, we'll break down their brutal start to the season and if they can withstand all the blows. That's ahead on College Football Live.
College Football Live is presented by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing. You're watching College Football Live, presented by Mercedes-Benz.
This is a big year for USC as they're coming off a 5-7 season. The first 6 games will be big for the Trojans as they face Pac-12 rivals Stanford, Utah, and Washington. They also have to travel to South Bend to play Notre Dame. So, guys, when you look at this schedule, over under 2.5 wins for the Trojans in their first 6 games this season, Dusty.
I'm going to go over, but it's kind of cautiously. I don't think it's easy. Like that Utah game, I'm surprised that they're a favorite. I don't know how USC is going to block that Utah defensive line. The start of this season is so big for this team, for Clay Helton. If they get to that bye week against Notre Dame and they're not over that number, he may not be there, right? I mean, if they're 2-3 at the bye week, I don't know what's going to happen. And the thing for me at USC, watching the last few years, the offensive line, defensive line is not what it was in years past on teams you played for when they were competing for national championships. It seems that they've taken a real dip in those departments. And they've been so strong in those areas for so long, it's just kind of puzzling to me that the depletion of talent has been at that point.
Dusty, I'm going to take the over, but I'm going to remove the caution tape. And here's why. You talk about the porous offensive line and defensive lines, but USC has talent at the skill positions. New offensive coordinator Graham Harrell, he's going to run some empty sets. He's going to run some 4 wide receiver sets. You want to know where USC is strong? At the receiver position.
Yep, that's right.
Tyler Vaughn, Armond St. Brown. They have talent there, and I think he's going to find a way to spread the ball out. Graham Harrell, he uses 4 receiver sets over 30% of the time last year at North Texas, whereas last year for SC, they were only in it 7% of the time. So now what you're doing, you're taking off a bigger, slower guy, and you're bringing in a speedster, which is what USC prides himself in and has been for years. I think USC gets over 2.5 with these.
I'm also going to take the over. Don't forget, at wide receiver, you got Michael Pittman Jr.
Yes.
Another stud, along with Amon-Ra St. Brown and Tyler Vaughns. Listen, the issue for these guys really has been in the recruiting battle, right? When SC's good, let's go a global look at these guys. Take a step back and look at this whole picture, right? When the Pac-12 is relevant, SC's really good.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When SC's really good, nobody can come into California and poach any of their players, right? And right now, or at least the past couple years, when you come off a 5-7 season, some of these other schools are coming in, the Texases, the Oklahomas, the Floridas,
exactly
Florida States.
Right.
They're coming in and stealing some of these players from California. That can't happen. And this is their prove-it year, especially for Coach Helton. This is, I mean, he's primed and ready to go. With this offense, like you said, they have a chance to score a ton of points. Now, is that going to be enough? I think they get over the 3-win mark by week 6. But is it going to be enough? I mean, time will tell. And it's dicey out there, right?
Yeah,
it's,
even when you talk about the state of USC, because I was at the Texas program that began the downfall when we went 5-7. For USC to get back on track, they have to do it immediately. They have to be very succinct in what they do.
Right.
If they're with Clay Helton, stick with Clay Helton.
Sure.
If you're not, move on and move on quickly and efficiently. Remember, Texas after Mack Brown, well, Charlie Strong, but some were in, some were out. They kind of sputtered for 3 years. And then finally, after Tom Herman's second year, they're getting back on track. You don't want to see that for USC. It's kind of make a decision and stick to your decision and stick to your guns.
Big year. I think a lot of those questions are going to be answered throughout the course of the season. But I'm with you, recruiting. When I look at the rankings, Washington's beating them, Oregon's beating them, Stanford's beating them. You mentioned all those other schools around the country. They're coming into Cal, too. But teams in their own conference are out-recruiting them. That can't happen.
That makes it tough for them. SC's got to win a bunch of games this year to reverse that trend like you talked about.
And you talk about fight on. It feels like they've just been fighting for credibility these last couple years. And that's a notion that the Group of Five continues to fight for.
Right.
It's credibility. It's notoriety. Now, UCF has no doubt been the class of the non-Power Five teams the last two seasons. They've gone 25-1, the best record in the FBS in that span, including two appearances in the New York Six games. But outside UCF, guys, which Group of Five team do you think can make some noise, Mark?
I'm taking Army. They won 11 games last year, 10 games the year before that. Jeff Monken, their coach, this guy took Oklahoma to the wire, right? They had him up against the ropes. I kept watching this game last year and kept cutting to the game. Upset alert, upset alert. They had him ready to go and win that game, and they just lost by a touchdown in overtime. They scored 70 points in their bowl game last year. And listen, these guys are a time of possession team. They limit your scoring opportunities. If they can stop you once or twice while you're on offense, get one or two turnovers, even one turnover with their time of possession, I mean, you're really handcuffed on offense. These guys, they'll sneak up on you and win some big games.
I love that pick, Mark. I worked the Army-Houston bowl game, and I'm actually going to go with Houston.
Ooh.
Why? Because they have a stud in De'Eric King at quarterback. He led the nation with 50 total touchdowns before he got injured. Everybody talks about Dwayne Haskins, and you talk about Kyler Murray. De'Eric King had the fourth best QBR. He was that dude. Mind you, this year, they're getting Dana Holgorsen, former West Virginia head coach. I think De'Eric King goes crazy. I think he puts on for H-Town, and I think they really, really step up. They're my surprise sleeper team.
I like Dana Holgorsen at Houston. I think that's going to be very interesting. But for me, I'll stick in the same American Conference, but it's Memphis. Mm. And you look at Memphis, how close they've been to taking down UCF the last 2 years. They played in the American Championship the last 2 years. I think Mike Norvell is that next Group of Five coach to get a big-time Power Five job. And I think this year, with what they have coming back, Brady White at the quarterback spot, running back Patrick Taylor, who's been behind Daryl Henderson a little bit, but he's a stud. I think the offense is going to pick up where it's left off. And defensively, eight starters back for Mike Norvell. I think it could be his best defense that he's had. The month of November is going to be key. That's where it's really tough. At Houston, at UCF, Cincinnati on a short week. If they can manage that November, I think Memphis is going to be a really good team to start this season. And I got them in the opener on ABC against Ole Miss. So I've already started watching tape on them. Ole Miss better be ready to play because Memphis, they're going to give the Rebels all they can handle.
Plug. Make sure you're watching. I mean, college football is here. And our guy, Trevor Maddich, he did his homework leading up to the season. He's actually been touring the country, and he stopped by Oklahoma to discuss their expectations this season and to break down their ball-hawking defense. That's ahead.
For the last 10 years, in the early summer, I'd leave my home in Nashville and drive all around the country visiting college football programs to find out what they're doing and why and how. It's my own time and my own expense, but it's absolutely an adventure every time I do it, and I love it.
This is one of the best offensive lines in all of college football, right here at Oregon. In college football, the road always leads to Alabama.
Just made it to Oklahoma.
I kind of want to try and break your arm.
That is evil.
You're in Miami, the first thing you think of is the defense.
It's kind of vicious.
It's not taking up way at all.
I just got to run right through him.
Oh, my God. Did that just happen?
I miss this game, man.
As you see there, Trevor put some miles on that car. And he pulled up to Norman, Oklahoma to visit head coach Lincoln Riley, new defensive coordinator Alex Grinch, and key members of the Sooners defense to find out what Oklahoma is doing to get their defense to a national championship level.
All right, just made it to Oklahoma. The Sooners have made the college football playoff in three of the last four seasons on the strength of one of the best offenses in the nation. In order for them to get to the next level, their defense has to elevate. We'll talk to head coach Lincoln Riley and some of his key leaders to find out what they're doing to bring the Sooner defense back to national championship play.
The defense is the side of the ball that really needs to elevate in order to get to that next level. You brought in defensive coordinator Alex Grinch this year.
Alex and our group of defensive coaches, they do a tremendous job of explaining and holding our guys to high standard. I think our players have bought in. We know takeaways are such a big part of the game, and that's an area that we need to take a big step up in, and the way that they emphasize it is unique.
Coach Alex Grinch, you are the new defensive coordinator here at Oklahoma. What is the importance of takeaways to what you're teaching here?
So we did a study several years ago, which 24 takeaways, regardless of any other stat, offensively or defensively, resulted in 9 wins.
So 24 takeaways. Last year they had 11. So the first thing I noticed when I walked in this room was this. What is this and how does it relate to takeaways?
Something that allows the guys in every single meeting room as they're coming in and out, just reminders to why we play football on our side of the ball. It's hit it, it's smack it, it's punch it.
You've got some terrific team leaders on this team. Let's bring them in. The key to getting more takeaways is getting behind the line. And so you guys do a lot of things to get behind the line.
Hopkins, hit as he throws. It's intercepted by Kenneth Mann. Ellinger, knocked down for a safety. Trey Brown came out of blitz, and Ellinger never saw.
Great sack, you know what I mean? You made the play, but my biggest thing is, like, why you had to take off like that? Like, I'm trying to go celebrate with my teammates. You're going to speed off. I'm literally out of breath.
I honestly didn't know what to do, right? Like, I'm like, oh, my God, did that just happen?
Kenneth, what are you doing here?
With the full zone, I knew my nose was going to lag into that backside A, so I knew that frontside A was going to be there. I knew I was going to have to hit the A-gap hard, and so, you know, hit it, and a little gift was in there.
All right, so here's the ball. Ball's out. K-9, terrific strip. The ball's sitting right there. And look at that. It's a race.
When he picked it up, like, I couldn't even be mad.
Yeah. He said if it was anybody else, he was going.
Yeah, like, if it was anybody else, we would have been going at it.
When you're creating havoc, then takeaways happen. Let's go out in the field, and I want you guys to show me exactly what techniques you use and what's going through your mind when you're doing what you do. I'm going to try to hold that ball. I want to see if you guys can get it away. You're securing the tackle. You guys are coming in to rip that ball, right? How do you do it? What do you do? So I'm worried about Neville now because he's got me wrapped up and he's going to hurt me. Here you guys come. I think I'm secure. What do you do?
One of my favorite things to do, I kind of want to try and break your arm, so.
Okay, now why are you grabbing me there?
A lot of guys, they think about, like, just getting at the ball. I want to take your arm right here,
yeah,
and I just want to pull it back like that.
Ooh.
So that ball, you pull your fingers out, that ball come out.
So if I'm fighting the fingers here, now I'm vulnerable for the next guy.
Right.
A lot of times if you're getting hit, you will loosen up your grip, mm-hmm, and so if you punch under, it's just going to pop right out.
That guy's got hands. If you can get a hold of me here, now I'm at the weakest spot of my whole body. That is evil. That's flat out evil.
So the Sooner defense will definitely look to bounce back after last year's showing. New defensive coordinator Alex Grinch will be tasked with improving a unit that ranked towards the bottom of the country in yards allowed per game, points allowed per game, and takeaways. You on the offensive side, Jalen Hurts was named the starting quarterback yesterday. The grad transfer from Alabama has 7-1 odds to win the Heisman Trophy this season behind his former teammate Tua Tagovailoa and Clemson's Trevor Lawrence. So guys, if Hurts can win college football's highest honor, it would make 3 straight Heisman Trophy winners for Oklahoma. But realistically, what are the chances that Hurts can win the Heisman, Dusty?
He's got a realistic chance. I think it's going to be tough. And I'm not going to go out and say, like I said last year, that there's no way – I said last year there's no way Kyler Murray can be as good as Baker Mayfield. Wrong.
Yeah.
So I don't want to say that, right? But at the same time, he is following two guys who had prolific college seasons to win their Heisman Trophy. I mean, Baker Mayfield set the quarterback efficiency record in NCAA history only to be bested by Kyler Murray last year. So I think there's an element of voter fatigue, and I think there's an element that not only will Jalen be compared with the other players in college football, he's going to be compared with the last two Heisman Trophy winners at Oklahoma. He could have a phenomenal season, but it still may not translate into a Heisman Trophy.
First things first, Dusty, records are meant to be broken. I think that's the first thing we have to
agree. Rules are meant to be broken.
That's the first thing. Both can be broken. But beyond that, you look at Kyler Murray and Baker. They left some meat on the bone. What I mean by that is they didn't go undefeated. Jalen Hurts can go undefeated. And let's take it one step further. None of them will have the story that Jalen Hurts has. True. I don't know if we've met a more selfless football player. Remember, Jalen Hurts could have taken the Kelly Bryant approach, and in my opinion, he should have taken the Kelly Bryant approach. Chunk the deuces, had two more years left to improve his game and work on his craft. Instead, he stayed at Alabama, helped them beat Georgia to go to another national championship. He sacrificed a year. The whole nation saw that. So even if his numbers statistically aren't as impactful, I think the story behind that can really sway people.
I agree. I'm going to piggyback on that. And all I'll say is he has a chance. I don't think his numbers are going to be quite as good as his predecessors, fair, right? He has a chance to do something that neither of those guys have done. And he's got more experience in this college football playoff than anybody on the staff and in that meeting room. Mm-hmm. He's won games in the college football playoff. He's won a championship. He can do that at Oklahoma, cement his legacy there. He'll be one of the best quarterbacks to ever walk that
campus. Now, here's the kicker, Mark. They vote before the championship, which is what might actually hurt Jalen.
Correct.
That's a good point.
His point. He could not win the Heisman yet. When you look back at his career at Oklahoma,
yes,
what he
make
did
a bigger
season,
correct,
it could actually be a bigger impact for the team, for the program, than just winning the Heisman Trophy. I think it's a great point, and it's very realistic. And if he has a chance to play his former team in Alabama,
come on.
That's ratings.
That's ratings. That's ratings made of right there.
I feel like write a better story.
People are rooting for him.
Right?
I feel like everybody just has this general consensus. Like, we want this guy to do well.
Yeah.
What Ocho said is exactly right. It's an amazing story, and in a time where quarterbacks are looking to find the door,
go
to the next place to get an opportunity, he stood strong.
He did.
Right? And he did what a true leader does. He stood with his team, and when the opportunity presented itself, he made the most of it, and he led his team to a championship. So I'm with you. He won over America. He is definitely America's darling. I think that's what's so interesting about this. Some will say voter fatigue. Some will compare him to the former Heisman Trophy winners, and some are going to be rooting for the story. It's what makes this upcoming season for Jalen Hurts that much more exciting.
Mm-hmm. And to your point, Mark, if he can take them to that next level, because Oklahoma has been kind of hovering over the college football playoff but can't get that win, if he can take them to that next level, then he'll win the court of public opinion, maybe not the Heisman, but he can walk away a king in his own right.
Let's actually look at the top two teams that define the Big 12 at the top. Oklahoma and Texas are ranked in the preseason top 10 for the first time since 2010. So, Dusty, I ask you, who has more pressure to perform this season, Oklahoma or Texas?
See what's going on? They're trying to make division amongst us. You know what? I'll say this. They both have pressure. This is Oklahoma and Texas. Like, these are two of the big boy programs in college football. So I think that they both have pressure. And what I would say is it's pressure on the Big 12 because that's the only conference that hasn't won a college football playoff game, like Mark said. Not just Oklahoma has it. The league hasn't. So I think that this league, it needs Oklahoma and or Texas to break through and win a college football playoff game. And I think it's important this year, and the conference is in a great spot. Because for the first time since 2010, two teams are in the preseason top 10. So they're already starting the season on the right note. Can one of these two teams finish the season the right way and get this conference back to where they need to be? That's what I can't wait to find out.
The question is, will they burst under pressure? Will they rise to the occasion? And I think both programs will rise to the occasion. Oklahoma has been phenomenal for the last decade and change, and they don't get enough credit. That's the first thing. But I think Texas is here to stay, and that's not opinion, that's fact. Clemson was so good off recruiting classes. 14, Deshaun Watson. 15, Cleveland Farrell, Christian Wilkins, Austin Bryant. Well, Texas, back-to-back top three recruiting classes, led by their recruiting coordinator and Brian Carrington, etc. They just have something that's special, that is building, that's budding. I don't think either program is worried about the pressure, Mark. I think both of them are just ready to thrive and ready to continue to cement themselves, not just as one-time contenders, but as big-time players in college football.
I agree. The most important thing, whatever happens in the Red River Showdown, rivalry, shootout, whatever you call it, that team has to go to the playoff and that team has to represent the Big 12 and win. They got to get to that next level. They got to get to the championship to keep the Big 12 relevant. And like you said, be the first Big 12 team to win a college football playoff game.
Yeah, to his point, you say both teams need to rise to the occasion, but it has been two different occasions for these teams. Yeah. I mean, Texas, the last 3 years is, okay, they're relevant for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Oklahoma has been among the elite. So do you put them in the same occasion?
Not at all. Oklahoma has been there before. Oklahoma has been there
three
and they have
years.
Stayed there.
Right.
Like, Oklahoma is, they are in the
top. So then
top.
There's a different type of pressure.
For Oklahoma, you have to win a playoff game now. That's their next
expectation.
So then
is that more of a pressure, to my point, to get to the crux of the question, is winning a playoff game for Oklahoma more pressure than Texas getting into the top four?
I'm going to say no. Because if you're Texas, you've been biting at this for years. Right. After you lost Mack Brown and you brought in Charlie Strongo, they thought that was it. And then you're bringing Tom Herman and it's like, but we only went 7-6. No, now after last year winning 10 games, Texas wants to be there. They need to be there. They want to stay there. I think they really have the pressure and I think they're ready for it.
There's more pressure on Texas, absolutely. And I think that week two game against LSU is huge. After winning 10 games last year, beating Oklahoma once, playing them very tough in the Big 12 championship game, and then bullying Georgia, right? If they can follow that up with a week two win against LSU, who's going to come in at number 6, I think that is the upward trajectory, the momentum that that program needs to stay and truly prove that Texas is back.
No doubt. Much more to come, including Tate Martell. May have missed out on the starting QB role at Miami, but will we still be seeing him line up on offense for the Canes this weekend? We'll discuss how the top recruit may be switching things up.
How great is it to have college football back?
Now you got a friend in me.
Not so fast, Teflon Don.
You baby Silver!
And I got him too.
I pick Jennifer.
If we stick together, we can see it through.
You got a friend.
I'm going to Disney World.
And all this is like Fantasyland.
I cannot wait for college game day. And Auburn fans no longer have to wait to hear who their starting quarterback is because they have named Bo Nix, the true freshman, the starter. Mark, what's your expectations of this true freshman in Gus Malzahn's offense?
We talked about their schedule for Bo Nix, son of former Auburn Tigers quarterback Patrick Nix. He's going to have to use his feet a little bit. Good thing he's a little bit of a dual threat type player opposed to Gatewood, who's more of a pocket passer. But with this schedule, they got Florida. They have to play Georgia as well, so he's going to have all his work cut out for him. It could be a tough road for him.
He's a big-time high school quarterback, right? Mr. Alabama, won two state championship with his father as his head coach. I mean, a dual-threat guy, can throw it but can also run it. He's not going to be Nick Marshall, but I think he's going to be more athletic than Jarrett Stidham was, so I think that's going to allow them to have a little bit more quarterback run game, and that's the thing for me. Auburn's got to get back to who they are. Winning the line of scrimmage, being able to run the football to help out the true freshman, Bo Nix.
I get really excited about true freshman quarterbacks because the ceiling is so high for them. He may take some lumps and some bruises early, but what I love, a coach's kid. When you talk about the best players early on in their career in college that I ever played with were coaches' kids. There's just something different about the maturation of somebody who's had to deal with that level of scrutiny already at a younger age. So when I look at Auburn, I wouldn't be worried. Yes, you might take some bruises early, but the ceiling is just extremely high when you're playing with a true freshman who's so, so talented.
Maybe unrealistic ceiling, and they got Oregon in that home opener.
Well,
exactly. I'm calling it a home opener. It's in Dallas. I think Auburn's going to have the crowd there.
On a grand stage in Jerry's world. So, you know, he will have the fire under his feet.
He's been living for this moment his whole life, right? I mean, this has been his dream since he's been born. So I would imagine the Auburn fan base is going to be excited. They're going to be pumped up and ready for him. And I'm sure that that first opener against Oregon, he's going to have some butterflies, but I look for the true freshman to make some plays.
So, cool for his dad, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, very cool.
All right, so that's who Auburn has as their man under center. Now, we told you last week that former Buckeyes QB Tate Martell lost out on the starting quarterback role at Miami, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's not going to get some tick this year. Martell reportedly took snaps at wide receiver during Miami's close scrimmage on Friday. Your reaction, Acho, to maybe him switching things up?
No, I hate it. My thing is, you went there to be a quarterback. You lost the job. Now Miami's going to have a backup quarterback problem, if nothing else. I hate it. You look at guys like Braxton Miller. That was a 4-4 guy. You look at guys like Julian Edelman. That was a low 4-5 guy. To my knowledge, Tate Martell coming out of high school was a 4-7 kid. Now, I trust Manny Diaz, the head coach of Miami. I trust that he knows what he's doing. But Tate Martell, you lost the battle. Don't lose the entire war. Just work on your craft, and who knows when your number's going to be called.
You clocking his 40 these days, Acho?
Look, yeah, man, I gotta quit. That thumb now is quick twitch.
But, I mean, this is a coach's decision. I can't get on the kid. I mean, I think it's kind of crazy, too. I'm with you. Like, if you're a quarterback, play quarterback. There's a difference between quarterback and wide receiver. But coaches are the ones that put players in their position. So if Manny Diaz thinks that he can help impact this team as a wide receiver, again, I don't necessarily get it. But if it doesn't work out, that's more on the coach and the player, I would think, right?
I agree, unless he's Matt Jones, which I don't know if we think he's that based on his 40 time, Acho, right? Is he Julian Edelman? Is he Ryan Tannehill? I don't know. Time will tell. My only trust is in Dan Enos, the offensive coordinator. Yeah. He's dealt with this rotating quarterback issue from Alabama, as we know, with Hurts and Tua. So if anybody knows how to handle it, it's going to be him. And the other thing, too, is get your best playmakers on the field.
That's right.
If he's one of them, whatever it takes mentality, all hands on deck, I can't knock
it. The knock is, though, when I hate when you see quarterbacks move to receiver. Then all of a sudden you have a problem at quarterback because players get hurt. And now Tate Martell, he's not taking the same amount of snaps. For those
what if he's 13, though? What if Nicosi Perry's beating him out? And the only way for him to help impact this team is to play receiver. Is he supposed to tell his coach no?
No,
and he transfers somewhere? Then
again,
we rip him even more. So there's an element of this. If it's coming down from the coaches, you should kind of praise him to step out of his comfort zone and play a position that he's not accustomed to playing just so he can help the team.
And he's engaged. It'll keep him into it. I'm telling
true.
You lose a quarterback battle, you're kind of like drifting.
Like, what am I here for?
And those walkthroughs, just like, what am I doing? Yep. Like, he's the guy now. Do I really? You know, I'm sure that's going through his head. And then maybe this is all just a front. It's smoke and mirrors. And hey, Florida, check this out.
It could come down from the coaches, or it also could be Tate, because to your point, you talk about the careers of the NFL, those players in the NFL. Being on the field can also get you a job at the next level. If he's not on the field, he's not going to be able to
get a letter. Players want to play.
All right, much more to come on College Football Live, including who are the most important players in all of college football. We'll discuss that and more when we return. And guys, we have football this weekend. Again, Miami takes on number 8 Florida Saturday on ESPN and the ESPN app from Camping World Stadium in Orlando. Canes, Gators, 7 p.m. Eastern. Don't miss it.
Welcome back to College Football Live, presented by Mercedes-Benz.
The AP announced their preseason All-America team today. Clemson's Trevor Lawrence got the first team nod at QB, while Tua Tagovailoa was named second team. Clemson and Alabama led the way with 3 first team selections each. The rich get richer. Welcome back to College Football Live. I'm Cassidy Hubbard, Dusty Dvorak, Mark Sanchez, and we're now welcomed by our college football writer, Bill Connolly, who has an article on ESPN.com right now called The 25 Most Important Players in the College Football Playoff Chase. And Bill, in looking at this article, you have a list 25-1, but then within the list, you have different categories. Can you explain your criteria here?
Yeah, so the general idea was basically, we know who the best players are right now, or who we think are the best players right now. And I wanted to try to take a look at, number one, who the guys who could take a big leap forward and end up the year being in that list. And number two, the guys who are going to define the season, just, you know, for the games they might win or the way they might perform. So that was the general premise. There were categories, guys who just might take a huge leap, guys who could pull a big upset, things like that.
But ultimately, you had Kellen Mond at the number one position. Why?
primarily because he could both take a big leap and pull multiple upsets because A&M plays so many good teams. It does seem like, you know, his performance against Clemson last year, his performance in key moments against LSU, especially in the overtimes, he showed very, very high upside. He's got a nice receiving core, and he could absolutely lead a top 10 team, beat one of the top five teams, beat another one of the top five teams, and really make a mark on the season.
So, Mark, given Bill's criteria, who jumps out to you as the most important player in the college football playoff chase?
I was looking at the quarterback from Nebraska, Martinez. I'm just intrigued by this article in your deep dive. Talk to me about his connection to McKenzie Milton and Scott Frost, that whole triangle there.
Yeah, it's been really easy to assume a McKenzie Milton-like leap just because of who he's coached by, and that might be a very fair assumption. But if he does, I mean, obviously he showed flashes last year.
Sure.
If he takes a step forward in his development, Nebraska could, among other things, at least have the best offense in the Big Ten West, one of the best offenses in the country. And I don't know if I trust their defense enough to treat them as a true contender. Sure. They could be a Big Ten contender. They could pull upsets as well.
They're one of my sleepers, so this article helped out a lot. Thank you.
That's right.
So he's a quarterback, so he's going to ask you about
of course.
That's all anybody else knows about. But I'm going to ask you about a defensive mm-hmm. player. How about Penn State? I called a couple of their games at the end of the year. Micah Parsons was a linebacker that I saw on your list that I think could have a breakout season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously he came with lots of blue chip hype to begin with, but you watched his development from September to November. I mean, he's super athletic, super smart, and I was basically in the kind of transcendence category looking for guys who could pull a Josh Allen, pull an Ndamukong Suh from back in 2009. And he absolutely belongs on that list because if he is as good as we think he could be, that's a top five defense on paper, and Penn State doesn't need as much from their offense at this point to become a pretty big contenders themselves.
How much do you see this list changing as we go through the season?
It is interesting because since I set up categories, there were kind of, you know, other candidates for those categories, like a Felipe Franks mm-hmm. from Florida could absolutely take the kind of leap that maybe Kellen Mond or Joe Burrow takes. Franks is a big one. You run through the list of quarterbacks who are going to have a chance at a lot of big teams. I didn't include Kelly Bryant from Missouri, but he could be on there as well if he's kind of ready for that. But it is the upsets and the moments in the season really define things, and that's not necessarily something we get from an All-American list. And so I was trying to fill in the gaps a little bit.
Well, it was certainly a fun read. Make sure to check it out with all of Bill's work on ESPN.com. Coming up, we'll have the ultimate English lesson from the one and only Mark Sanchez.
College Football Live is presented by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing.
Yesterday, we revealed that Tua Tagovailoa was the top returning offensive player according to the PlayStation Player Impact Rating, which measures the effect of every player in college football relative to his position on a 0 to 100 scale. Today, Dan Orlovsky takes a closer look at the top returning defensive player this year.
Offensive players usually get the highlights, but the PlayStation Player Impact Rating also credits the value that each defensive player brings to the field. Defensive lineman Jovan Swan from Stanford earns a rating of 98 and is the top returning defensive player in the nation. Swan's 2018 stats were respectable, 4.5 sacks and 7 tackles for loss, but Swan's impact goes beyond traditional stats. Stanford opponents threw the ball more when he was on the field and yet still averaged 2 yards fewer per pass attempt. This was largely due to a good pass rush, evidenced by the much higher team sack rate of 8.7% when he was on the field versus the 5.1% when he was off. The PlayStation Player Impact Rating recognizes that often the most impactful player isn't always the one that ends up with the sacks, but the one that helps his teammates stop the opposing offense. No returning defensive player in the country was better at that in 2018 than Jovan Swan.
Tune in tomorrow as we reveal the top wide receiver in the PlayStation Player Impact Ratings. But this season, it's all about the QB. Laura Rutledge has more.
Tua loads up. He's going to go in. Touchdown, Alabama.
Lawrence finds T. Higgins. Touchdown.
It begins and could end with Tua and Trevor. Alabama's signal caller is on a mission for revenge, while Clemson's stellar sophomore is out to prove he wasn't a freshman fluke.
Herbert with a throw.
Caught! Touchdown, Oregon!
Quarterback quality can be found far and wide this season. Out west, Oregon's Justin Herbert, Washington's Jacob Eason, and USC's JT Daniels all look to lead the Pac-12 to the college football playoff. In the Big 12, Jalen Hurts is itching for a memorable second act in an Oklahoma Heisman three-peat.
Sam Ehlinger, straight up the gut!
We're back!
Sam Ehlinger is hungry to prove that Texas is back. And Iowa State's Brock Purdy isn't getting enough love.
Matters, throws in the end zone. Caught! Touchdown, Michigan!
The year of the quarterback is strengthened by Big Ten potential in Michigan, Shea Patterson, Nebraska's Adrian Martinez, and Ohio State's Justin Fields. The SEC isn't just a Tua show.
Fromm airs a beautiful toss, and Georgia takes advantage.
It has championship-minded Jake Fromm, highly motivated Kelly Bryant, breakout-ready Kellen Mond, and improved Felipe Franks. Trevor Lawrence is the ACC's unquestioned star, but keep an eye on Miami redshirt freshman Jaren Williams and Virginia's Bryce Perkins. By the way, people shouldn't sleep on Notre Dame's Ian Book. Which one of these quarterbacks will have the best year, and which one will we wish we hadn't overlooked? One thing's for sure, this will be the year of the quarterback.
A lot of expectations for Trevor Lawrence, who you can see and more on ACC Network, which is coming Thursday at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific. Visit getaccn.com to check availability. If you don't see your provider listed, demand they carry ACC Network. Not the ACC Network, ACC Network.
See what you did there.
And while we're in discussions of the, look, we haven't reacted. Why? Why should it be the?
Well, it matters which, it follows the same rules as A and N. So you say A tree and apple, same thing with A xylophone and x-ray. They both start with the letter X, but since it sounds like a vowel as opposed to a consonant, then it's the and the. That's what you get. That's the difference.
Okay. Professor Sam?
Exactly.
That is impressive.
So, okay, great. Let me just try to boil this down. Ohio State trying to trademark which word, the or the? They're the same
Ohio
word.
Ohio State, and it's a vowel, so O would be the.
So it's the Acho.
Right.
And it's the Sanchez.
That's right.
Okay. You know,
so I can start printing the Ohio State shirts then.
Yeah, and you'll be safe. What throws me, though, Sanchez, then is I feel like it should be all about the you, not all about the you. So I'm going to text all my boys in Miami and let them know it needs to be all about the you, which honestly just doesn't sound nearly as cool.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a good point. That's as far as my professor.
you were so confident. You brought this up earlier, and we were all like, what? But then, Dusty, you did the homework,
right,
and you backed him up.
I did some research, and I came to find out that Mark is a lot smarter than he looks. I mean, goodness. It's the truth of the matter.
Do we feel exactly good about Ohio State trying to trademark this, though?
I mean, look, if they want to do it, they're trademarking the Ohio State University.
Yes.
They're not trademarking
not
the
letter, not the word.
You know what? If all the guys want to go on Monday Night Football and they want to say the Ohio State University,
right,
University just wants to make some money. Let them make some money.
And I feel it. I'm like, I actually like Monday Night Football. Wait till the promos and you hear the dude say the pregnant pause. Ohio State University.
Right. Exactly.
I respect it.
I got to say my apologies to player. I said it was Hall & Oates at the beginning of this show. It was player.
I can't go for that.
But you can't go for that?
No, can't.
You know what I'm going to do? My whole drive back, Hall & Oates, because I need those sweet sounds. Thanks for watching College Football Live.